I will open the Senate Committee on Rules for March 27, 2009. We have a quorum of the committee present. I'm anticipating the other two members sometime in the near future. I will begin by opening a public hearing on SB 647. Will the committee administrator give a brief overview?
Senate Bill 647 would change the date of primary election from the third Tuesday in May to the third Tuesday in September in even-numbered years. It retains the presidential preference primary in May. It also modifies periods for election contests and recounts and filing deadlines. It also requires the Secretary of State to print a combined primary and general election voters pamphlet in September.
Would you like a motion on this bill? We can pass it. You want to hear something first? Okay.
Senator Morissette, please begin at your leisure.
Okay, I think Eric Gates sitting behind me, the staff ready to pounce. So I'll take care of it.
They have signed up as being neutral on the bill.
Oh,
so please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing this bill. I did talk with the Secretary of State, Kate Brown, this morning via her cell phone, and this bill was heard in 2003. I think she said Roger Beyer was the vice chair and Bev Clarno was on the committee, and there was quite a discussion of moving the primary to September. However, Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. Okay. However, there are some problems with the bill, as you may already have surmised. First of all, there wouldn't be time for it would be very difficult to do a recount if the primary election was that late in September. So that would be one concern. They would have to wait 30 days. There would be a 30-day time lag. There's also a concern about the voters' pamphlet statement that would be difficult to get in that a short time period, and also mail to the ballots to the military could be a problem. And those were the issues that came up during this last, well, in 2003 when the bill was discussed before. Now, what I would like to do, I don't expect this bill to go anywhere today, obviously, or maybe ever, but what I would like to do is explore some of the timing and the mechanics of this with the Secretary of State's office. Because there are definitely some advantages to shortening the time between the primary and the general election in terms of having to start the campaign over again, having to raise more money, driving people crazy with campaign ads from, you know, the first of the year until November. So I understand. Now, there may be other problems that Secretary of State staff people want to talk about, but what I would like to do, what I'm going to do anyway, regardless of what happens to this bill, I'm going to explore some of the timing possibilities. And Kate said that she thought that would, you know, be worth looking at again, but I don't know if they're insurmountable. Now, the state of Washington has their campaign in August, which I think is the wrong time to have it. She said they had talked about moving ours from March into June before school was out, but that wouldn't really solve anything. There would still be this long time period between the primary and the general. So I think the idea is good. The mechanics probably won't work out. So with that, I will end my discussion, and if you have questions or comments, I'd be very happy to hear them.
Any questions for Senator Morissette? Okay. Thank you very much. Good. For coming this morning.
Thank you. And if I get more information, I'll be back.
Okay. Thanks. Jan Coleman from the County Clerks. Ms. Coleman, would you proceed at your leisure and please identify yourself for the record?
Good morning. I'm Jan Coleman with the County Clerks Association. I am the retired Yamhill County Clerk. Actually, my statement is very short. The Senator pretty much stated some of the concerns that we have with this bill. It might be advantage to candidates, but it's certainly not to election officials, because some of the time periods do not allow us to conduct our business as we need to do it in a timely manner. Big one is the mailing of ballots to the military people. We have to do that 45 days ahead of time. This bill does not provide for that. That's with the federal stipulation. In 2000, that was one of the problems that occurred down in Florida. They had a late primary, and then they had a runoff election that came that went off into October. Therefore, they were not able to mail their military ballots timely. That was one of their problems. So that was one of the issues down there. We don't want to do that. The other things are things like filing dates and last dates to withdraw for a candidate who might want to withdraw as, who was elected in the primary. That date is 6 days after the election, which we have 20 days to certify. They don't even know for sure if they're elected at that point. So there's, you know, there's just several issues with this. And needless to say, many of the counties piggyback with the state on the voters pamphlet, so we would have similar problems with that.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Coleman? Seeing none, thank you very much. I'll call the next two parties up jointly, Mr. Miller and Mr. Pack. Mr. Pack, would you please proceed and identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. I will keep my comments very brief. After hearing the good senator from Springfield, we'd be happy to talk with him about the timing and logistical questions. He covered most of what I was going to raise for you. The only issue that I just did want to put on the record, of course, is going to be the fiscal impact of having a second primary in an election year, in a presidential election year. We would assume that the state would be responsible for paying for that election, and that would be about $2 million to conduct a statewide election. And with that, I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Mr. Pack? Seeing none, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm Senior Staff Counsel in the Office of the State Court Administrator. The Oregon Judicial Department, of course, is not taking a position on this bill, but I did want to point out one thing that if it should go forward, we might want to discuss. And I apologize to Senator Morissette and the committee. I haven't had an opportunity to talk to him yet, but of course I will. On page 32 of the bill, there's a provision that amends ORS 258055 regarding contesting the election. Typically in civil suits, the party has the responsibility of filing the petition or complaint and serving the other parties in the matter. In this instance, the bill would have the clerk of the court have the responsibility of serving the petition on the opposing parties. That is not a function that the courts do in other instances. It is not a function that the courts are equipped to do, and it would have an impact on the court's workload, but it's something we can talk about and figure out a way to make it work. The statute above that requires the parties to serve in other instances other than a challenge to the September primary. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay. I will close the public hearing on SB 647. I will open a public hearing on SB 613. Senator, well, first of all, Committee Administrator, will you give a brief overview?
SB 613 will require that candidates for precinct committee person of major political parties shall not be placed on the ballot for uncontested positions. Not later than 10 days after the filing deadline for those positions, the county clerks would declare qualified candidates elected. Additionally, when drafting this bill, legislative council removed the requirement that the parties elect committee persons that represent the genders equally. Ledge Council felt that might raise some constitutional issues, but there is an amendment proposed to remove that change and keep the statute as it was originally.
Okay, Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think the bill is very simple. The idea of listing all of the committee precinct persons on a ballot for issues for elections for which they're uncontested seems to be perhaps more in the realm of public education than it is election. So the suggestion has been made by one of the county clerks on behalf of the county clerks of Oregon that perhaps what we would be better served by doing is simply not listing the contested races anymore. And if the committee precinct persons are running uncontested...
Not listing the uncontested.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Not listing the uncontested races and simply publishing the results of the election. So in those uncontested races, you wouldn't have to go through the printing and editing and bear the expense of publishing the information. Mr. Chairman, on the issue of the gender, discussion with Ledge Council was that if we included the gender-specific information, that possibly would run into discriminatory behavior and be banned or just be unconstitutional because it would be a gender reference in the elections process, and we're advised that that's not legal.
And that's the purpose of your amendment?
Yes.
Okay. If I could just a little bit of levity here. When you when it was indicated to me you had an amendment, it wasn't really a great concern because the relating clause of your bill is quite small. If your relating clause had been the same as Senator Morissette's bill...
Yes. I wouldn't expect to be able... If there's an opportunity for me to sneak one past you, Senator, you can be rest assured I'll try it.
Well, we do actually have one person scheduled to testify, Ms. Coleman again, actually. Would you please come forward, again identify yourself for the record, and I believe you have written testimony also.
Senator Devlin, members of the committee, I'm Jan Coleman. I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks again today. There would have been more of us here today, but unfortunately it's spring break, and it's also, you know, we just had a filing date for the May election, and everybody's madly throwing together ballots, so you got me. What is being passed out is basically a spreadsheet that we put together to help with the fiscal on this, and this is a positive fiscal impact on this. We would definitely save money, counties would save money, if we could implement this bill. This gives you an idea of the statewide of the total positions for precinct people. Currently, they are Dem and Rep. You can see when we have men and women, the total positions down there statewide for both of the 15,634. And you can see then of the Dems and the Reps, how many of those positions were filed for? Not very many. Okay. Then you go over to vacant positions, a whole bunch. Then we go to the write-ins. For those, lots of times you'll have a precinct. If you have a precinct with a lot of population, you could have as many as a vote for 9 or something. So you end up with lots of write-ins in these cases, especially if there are not very many people filed. For the Dem write-ins, we had almost 63,000. It takes 3 votes for a person to be elected to that position. So the person has to get at least 3. So you can see that 675 people got 3 votes of the Dems. In the total Republican write-ins, there were 27,500, and there were 647 of those getting three votes. Of those people of each party that were elected with the three votes, only 413 of those actually ended up accepting the positions. And then you can see the cost. Basically, that was estimated statewide. They were missing a few. Mm-hmm. So the cost savings for basically this would be around $220,000 statewide. Probably a little more because you're missing a few counties there. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to say, we have been contacting our local parties, and I do have a couple late emails that came in. Deschutes County says their Republican Central Committee is in support. Josephine County sent that both their Dems and reps are in support. Union County reps are in support. So we have been talking out there, too, and we're getting more of these positives to come in.
Okay. I will have some questions for Ms. Coleman, but are there other questions from the committee? Okay. Ms. Coleman, you're saving since the governments that the county governments are on an annual basis for budgets. Are these annual savings?
This it only primary years, so it would be.
Oh, I see. So
yeah.
Okay. So it would be in the primary years. The requirement for three votes, I'm just trying to refresh my memory, to be elected, is that a...
It's a statutory thing.
Statutory.
Correct.
And each party gets to designate, do they not, how many precinct committee people they might have for a precinct?
Actually, Senator Devlin, that is based on the registration in the county as of January 31st of the year when... the primary election occurs. So it's 500 or the better part thereof in a precinct. You base, so depending on how many people are in a precinct, how many of those people are assigned.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you can have up to 5,000 in a precinct
and,
now.
And that's a statutory standard.
That, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to clarify that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in other words, for... I mean, still the same number of voters, but we have some counties that when we, I mean, I think for good reason, and I know that it disappointed some, but we had some counties when we allowed counties to consolidate precincts after vote by mail was fully instituted, who actually did a lot of consolidation, so you can have a precinct, you know, with 4,000 or 5,000 voters in it, and others that did not, that might have a precinct with 300 voters in it, so... So, I mean, the number of precincts...
The number, the number ends up the same, but you're, that's correct,
yeah.
Senator, you're definitely.
Yeah. Any additional questions for Ms. Coleman?
I just have a comment.
Yes.
Yeah, and I appreciate this data. This is really interesting, not surprising, but interesting. Actually, I would go further in this and say I don't know why we do this at all. I don't know why we spend any money electing committee precinct persons. And you know, everybody struggles to get somebody to put their name on the ballot. If they don't, then they call you, and they just put you on as a committee, you know, nominate you anyway. You just file for it. But, you know, this would always seem to be something that the parties can do on their own, and if you want to just you know, sign up to be a committee person, I think it's a process that really should be out of the elections process. Unlike other partisan races, at some point that person can become a decision maker for the electorate. These never do. So it is. I just think it's you know, not a wise use of public resources to elect committee persons with the tax dollars to do that. But we'll take what we can get, I guess.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, I did a little quick calculation. I think the only downside I can see from this bill is in this particular time period where this chart was put together, we would have been down 413 precinct committee people because these are the ones that both got written in and accepted the nomination. But if you look at the cost... It cost the counties $537 per person to get these extra people in as precinct people. So I think that given the budget climate that we're all in, I don't think that's a very good cost-benefit ratio, even though I'm sure these are very, very valuable people.
Okay. Follow up to that. In terms of, I have to take a closer look at the bill, but in terms of the write-ins, you would still have to count the write-ins, isn't that correct?
Senator Devlin, I've been asked that, and my expertise says I'm going to defer to the state on that one.
Okay.
It would just be an uncontested race, a contested race that would be on the ballot. That's all that we're looking at here. So if it's uncontested, you're not going to see it on the ballot.
Right.
I'm not sure it's going to be directed from the state whether they tell us we have to have write-ins for that. Normally we would, yes.
Yeah, okay. The other thing is one of the concerns I have heard expressed, and I just put it on the table here, is that this might be one more step towards eliminating precincts. How would you respond to that?
Senator Devlin, I'm not sure. I know there's a few clerks out there that would like to have one precinct for the whole county. most of us would not. Logistically, I think it's easier to manage in precincts, some of your different districts and so forth. So I think that's a ways down the road.
Okay. Any additional questions for Ms. Coleman? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anything else, Senator Farrelly? No. Okay. Close the public hearing. Okay, we will go to a public hearing on SB 775.
Senate Bill 775 will conform current statute to comply with the ballot measure passed last year that repeals a portion of the double majority requirement. There's currently a notice required that states this measure needs a double majority vote, and this clarifies that for those measures that were repealed, that notice is not required.
Okay. Mr. Pack. And Mr. Pack, after you finish this one and we close this hearing, I'll go to a hearing of the next one so you can just stay where you're at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I brought both files just in case.
Okay.
For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 775. It's a simple little bill that one could describe as being Duncan-esque in that it's a good bill and does nothing. When the legislature referred changes to the Constitution regarding the double majority to voters, rather than amending the current provision of the Constitution, it added a new section to the relevant area of the Constitution, Section 11K of Article 11. And current statute refers to only the prior section of Article 11. So in our discussions with Legislative Council after voters adopted ballot measure 53, we felt it might be prudent to add the other reference to the statute so anyone reading the statute would know to look in two places in the Constitution, not just the one.
And my understanding of this, too, is obviously the effect of this would be on May and November elections. This language would not be there, but on all other special elections, this language would be there.
Mr. Chair, that is what the ballot measure did, yes.
Okay. Any questions?
Okay. I'm glad we're cleaning this up.
The union is safe.
I have the prerogative to do this, and I don't have much time to hear bills left before the 28th of April, even though I'm not subject to that deadline. does the committee have an objection if I move this into work session now?
No, although I like the relaying clause, ballot title. Do you really want to put some other stuff in this? Okay.
Well, I got plenty of relating clause. I got quite a number of relating to elections, which...
Okay.
I will open a work session on SB 775. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 775 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Do we have actually, we have to have these. Do we have a fiscal and a revenue statement?
Oh, yes, sir. Sorry.
It says no fiscal impact, no revenue.
Thank you. Senator Metzger is correct.
Okay.
Let me just double-check my file. Yes, I have both in my file.
Okay. Okay, it's been moved to send SB 775 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Senator Metzger, will you carry?
Sure.
Okay. SB 776. I will open a public hearing. We give a brief overview, and this will not be going to work session today.
Yes. Senate Bill 776 adjusts fees for material to be included in the voters' pamphlets. Mm-hmm. It also requires the Secretary of State to provide by rule for size and length of statements. You do have written testimony in your packets submitted by Daniel Meek.
Okay. Ms. Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. We asked the committee to introduce this bill as part of a conversation around our voters' pamphlet. There are really two issues that this bill could be used to address. One is the cost of producing and mailing the voters' pamphlet, and the other relates to the actual usability by voters of the voters' pamphlet. As you know, the voters' pamphlet is supported by fees from candidates and interested parties who file statements either in support or opposition of ballot measures. The cost of producing the voters' pamphlet varies year by year, election by election, obviously, dependent upon the number of candidates and the number of ballot measures and folks filing statements on those ballot measures. But if you look at all of the various elections, an average percent of the cost of producing a voter's pamphlet supported by the fees ranges from 25 to 35%. The rest of those costs are supported by the general fund. Recognizing that general fund dollars are in short supply this year and therefore in high demand, we thought we would at least ask for a vehicle to be in place should the legislature and Ways and Means decide they wanted to either increase the fees and back out some of the general fund, to reduce the amount of general fund that's supporting it. So that's why the bill you see before you deletes the current fee structure and simply has blanks. We aren't coming here today recommending a fee increase of any particular size. We're simply saying, here's a way that you could consider saving general fund and make the voters' pamphlet more self-supporting if that is something that the legislature wants to do. The other issue that the bill would allow us to do, and it could be done separately or in conjunction, is take a look at the voters' pamphlet. For many years, we've been producing this voters' pamphlet, you're all quite familiar with it, at the cheapest cost possible. That doesn't necessarily translate into a usable document for voters, and you're all very familiar with this. The print is very small, the paper can be difficult to read, and the size of the voters' pamphlet candidate statements are set in statute right now, and so we don't have a lot of flexibility in terms of design to make it more reasonably easy to read. We do have a graphic designer who is working with the Elections Division on a fellowship right now, and she's helping to improve the quality of some of our publications, and she came up with a variety of different redesigns that are a potential, and I have a few copies here if the committee is interested in looking at them.
Yeah.
I didn't bring a whole bunch of copies to save the expense and time of putting them together, but I'm happy to provide more if the committee wants. And we have other versions.
Yes.
But you'll see that in this, the font size is larger. We move from one... I won't take the committee's time to go through all the changes, but this is an example of how the voter's pamphlet could be improved to make it more readable and more usable to voters. It is one of our key performance measures in the Elections Division is to start tracking how usable the voter's pamphlet is to voters. So actually after the election, we'll be surveying a random sample of voters and asking them about the voter's pamphlet. Do they read it? Is it useful?
Well, I have a question. Mr. Chair?
They're running against the wrong people.
No, they got Merkley and Kroger's on page 11 and 12. Not a Republican in this deal. I'm off this bill.
Well, here's the Atkinson for governor one.
Where is it?
And who paid for it? Who's the top three contributors?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, this was a sample of a primary election, and apparently they did select just the Democratic primary to produce. I think that has no indication of the value of the redesign. I would ask you to at least give it a chance. The issue, obviously, with changing the design and improving the quality.
Can I remind people, in this particular hearing room, cell phones have to be completely off or they actually interfere with the audio system. So if anyone has a cell phone on, please turn it off.
Okay. That may have been mine, Mr. Chair. I apologize. It's not turning itself off. There we go. The issue with some of the changes that are suggested in some of our new designs are obviously cost. It is more expensive to print a better voter's pamphlet with an increased font size. There's more pages that would be involved. We'd be looking at possibly improving the quality of the paper stock. And I think the question really that we're posing with this is a cost-benefit analysis. We spend a lot of general fund dollars on a voter's pamphlet, and I think there are some questions about how readable and usable it is. Representative Jensen 2 years ago questioned whether or not we would comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act in relation to the font size. So we spend a lot of money producing something that may or may not be valuable. Is it worth spending a little bit more money to get a better value to the voters in terms of information? And perhaps, you know, in this economic times, that's not a viable alternative, but it's a question that we wanted to at least raise before the committee, and we did talk a little bit with the General Government Subcommittee of Ways and Means about it so that the conversation could begin.
Okay. Mr. Peck, I appreciate you bringing this to us. I would like if you could, maybe if you want to do longer, that's fine. If you want to do like 3 or 4, that's fine. But could you give us some numbers and give them to the entire committee on what the cost of the voters' pamphlets have been and how much of that cost has been borne by the people paying for voters' pamphlet statements and how much has come from general fund dollars?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to.
See, I wasn't even planted. Then a secondary question. You're starting to explore all the aspects of this, correct, so that I know that you primarily use what is quite similar to saturation mailing and voting of sending voters' pamphlets, which is about one of the lowest cost rates you can get. Obviously, this is relatively significantly heavier paper, and you're investigating the cost also in terms of what the mailing costs would be for this.
Mr. Chair, yes, and we have, and this is not necessarily representative of the actual paper stock that we would use. This is the paper stock that was produced for the mock-up, but we have a variety of alternatives. You're being handed out now some statistics on the voters' pamphlet from the 2000 through the 2008 elections. You can see the total costs. Obviously, for the primary, it's much less expensive due to the fact that there are no or very few initiatives on the primary election. And the costs range dramatically. $2 million in the 2000 general election, a little over $1 million in the 2008 general election, and you can see along the bottom the total revenue that's paid in fees for those voters' pamphlets and the percentage of the total cost.
Another question, Ms. Pack. In terms of if it was done in this manner, obviously there would be some limitations placed on it. I mean, obviously you'd have some limitations in terms of number of words. Those would have to be uniform, and you couldn't really modify things on the basis of ability to pay. You probably would not want to go to full color, obviously. But I've noticed in elections, just saying too much here in a sense, but if somebody's running in a house seat and wants something that's really nice, it'll cost this much. If they're running statewide and for some reason they're doing direct mail, and I don't know why, but don't tell the direct mail providers that, but, you know, the cost is down to about here. Have you done some real cost comparisons on these pieces? Because I don't know if there's, I don't know what the difference between a better, more readable voter's pamphlet is and the newsprint version that you have. I should call, say, the lower quality newsprint version that you have. That's old.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I also have another little...
For the committee, this was not planned.
I do my best to anticipate your questions, Mr. Chair. What you'll be handed now are cost estimates for six different versions of designs of the voter's pamphlet that we have looked at. The top one that you'll see when you get this is what we currently would do, this current voter's pamphlet on newsprint this way. After that, you'll see other versions that are larger in size, which accommodate a larger font size, also still done in newsprint, and then a couple that are on 50-pound offset, which is more like this before you now, and the estimated cost for that. And that does include postage, accounting for both the size of the book and the increased weight.
Any questions for Mr. Pat?
Mr. Chair, have you talked at all about trying to move part of the voter's pamphlet audience online? I know you do have the online voter's guide. Has there been any discussion of maybe giving voters the option of just having the online version?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, yes, we have talked about that. We actually did talk about it in the General Government Subcommittee as well. A big portion of the general fund budget of the Elections Division is direct reimbursement and costs associated with elections, you know, payments to the counties and then the voter's pamphlet. And so as we're looking at ways to have savings, that's certainly an option. I think, you know, we do currently publish the voter's pamphlet online. We could look at... There are a number of options that we could do. Alaska, for example, only allows one statement for and against a ballot measure. That would be something that you could do, and then you could direct others to a website. So that, you know, there are lots of people interested in putting statements into the voter's pamphlet. I think, you know, it's a policy question of information to voters, readily accessible. There are voters who don't have a computer at home and internet access, but they are relatively available at libraries and other public buildings. So I think it's a question that we'd want to look at carefully, but we are thinking about it.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Meskin.
Well, I just want to chime in to what Senator Burdick said, because I think as we move forward, we have to look at technology and what is changing and evolving, not only from a cost standpoint, but also the users. You know, like the Seattle PI is not going to be printing anymore. It's going to be online. I mean, it's just things are different. And when you think of the cost structure is, for example, candidates, you know, you have required information and stuff. And, you know, if you had a printed version that was just required information and dot, 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 you know, it could be pretty inexpensive to get everything out. And then, you know, with a link for an online, where you and people can put as many arguments as they want online, but a lot less cost than having to print all of that stuff and send it out in some big thick one, you know, where you can provide basic information and the tools to do that. I think as time goes on, Mr. Chair, we need to look at that, because that's how people more and more are getting information, and also with the cost structure, you know, I think that's keeping pace with the times. We're looking at e-government all the time, trying to become less paper-oriented, and I think the voter's pamphlet should be one of those.
Mr. Chair, may I
comment
briefly? Thank you, Senator Metzger. Yes, as we look at getting more and more information online, I always do want to point out that that's not free. It would be cheaper
free
than printing, but there's still costs associated with producing the materials and getting it online and the associated maintenance and server costs and all of that. It is cheaper, absolutely.
One other point I just want to make about that, though,
yes,
just a point, Mr. Chair, is that, and something I guess it's on its face is understandable, but there are mistakes on occasion, not very often, you know, but they do happen, right, with especially phone numbers that link you to porn sites instead of, you know, I mean, that's happened before, I understand, in the voter's pamphlet. But the one good thing about an online thing, you can, in real time, can correct stuff, but once you've sent it all out and you've got a few million of those sitting somewhere else, you're, you know, the cost both in terms of real cost as well as cost in terms of maybe misinformation is hard to retract. But the one good thing about the online things is that you can make modifications and changes and reach out to the public that way too.
Okay. Any additional questions? One last inquiry, actually, and I know you don't have one prepared for this.
You notice that my stacks of paper are smaller now.
Obviously, if you went to a system in which people could opt out of getting a paper version, you would actually obviously have to have a data system that would track that, and you would no longer be mailing as a, you know, just a broad saturation mailing. You would be going to the higher rate or one of the higher rates. Could you look into that issue in terms of what the difference per mail copy might be?
Mr. Chair, yes, we have looked at it. I don't have the number with me directly, but my fantastic staff who actually produced the voter's pamphlet do. I will say that it does become cost prohibitive because if you allow for voters to opt out, then you have to move away from mailing to every address to addressing them individually and mailing them. But I'll let Tammy answer.
We look. My name is Tammy Detweiler. I am a research analyst with the Elections Division. Senator Devlin, we have looked at this cost in respect to House Bill 2372, which proposed that we mail the voter's pamphlet to all registered voters versus all households. So that would obviously require us to individually label each voter's pamphlet if we're mailing them to registered voters. And the cost analysis came out, it is approximately double the price of saturation rate.
Okay. And the cost per item at saturation rate is?
I don't have a per item, I'm sorry, but it was approximately double the cost.
Okay, and we see, I think in some of your documents, the cost of mailing.
Yeah.
Okay. And I understand from the questions here that the a different type of question was asked also, and that is a saturation mailing of a basically a more focused voter's pamphlet and then other things being online as an alternative. So you wouldn't necessarily go away from saturation mailing.
Uh-huh.
So, okay. Any additional questions? Thank you both for being here.
Chairman, I do have a question. Could you talk just a little about format? I may have missed a discussion earlier, but these are two up. That is to say, there's two. And I understand that you may be considering reducing the space allowed for candidates or somehow changing the format. I'd like you to talk about that. And I see there's a breakdown for the different costs of the material. This is an Electrobrite paper. It's nice and heavy. It's a great and more durable package. And we're used to using newsprint, which is dingy and brown and light. But then again, it's for a very temporary use. So I'd like you to talk about format and package for just a minute.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Senator Ferrioli, we have looked at several different versions of how to redesign the voter's pamphlet. And based on the size of the paper and the font size, we may not actually have to decrease the word count of candidate statements. On some of the designs, it may need to go down a little bit. Those are options that we were looking at. We also, you'll see on the little spreadsheet that you have, we have a couple of options that continue to be on newsprint, recognizing the cheaper cost of newsprint. And you're right, it is, of course, just a temporary document, although, you know, voters hang on to them for a while. And then we have some on a higher quality paper that would allow the text to pop a little bit more than on the gray newsprint. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Great.
One last comment. I have always considered the voter's pamphlet a steal in terms of price, and I think it is actually a steal regardless of how many people it's mailed to, just for the people within a district. But I'm in quite a unique circumstance. Not that I want this, but I know that my good colleague to my right here, first right, Senator Farioli has
far,
far
right.
More...
Far right, Mr.
I just said to the right. has far more counties than I have. But because I'm the only metropolitan legislator in all three metropolitan counties, and the voter's pamphlet is mailed to all three of those counties and all the households in those counties, I think I have the greatest number of voter's pamphlets with my voter's pamphlet statement in them for a legislative candidate. You don't need to comment, Mr. Pence.
Mr. Chair, I did not plan to.
Known far and wide.
I think we should make him pay for the back cover.
That's the deal.
I might pay if I could get the front.
Mr. Chair, if I could one last
thing. You don't
need
to comment on that.
I was not going to comment on that. I was just going to offer that if any of the committee
Mr.
members...
Mr. Chair, the Secretary of State already has the full paper.
If any of the committee members would like to look at some of the other options, we'd be happy to bring mock-ups by your office.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming here today.
Now, hold on. Is he going to be here for the next bill? Or are we done with these guys?
No, he's not going to be here for the next
call. Oh, can I ask a question of Mr. Pack then?
Yeah. I can stay. That's fine.
Mr. Pack, on a different subject, but relating to the Secretary of State, you're aware of the little faux pas we had in my county, Senator Devlin's county, also Clackamas County, where the county clerk, the local Secretary of State, said, you know, that we had a 6 o'clock deadline, but it was really a 5 o'clock deadline, and now they're exploring, you know, what's the legal part of this. Is there any role or decision-making or influence, power, whatever, on resolving this issue that could come from your office? Or is this strictly a judicial issue at the point? Because I know a lot of people are kind of concerned about who's running in Clackamas County right now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, those deadlines are set in statute. Clackamas County did contact our elections director. We don't enforce these things. We advise counties in their conduct of their elections, and we did advise Clackamas County of the statutory deadline of 5 p.m. At this point, I think it is absent legislative action, and I do understand there are some proposals or some thoughts out there. It is a matter now for the judicial system should candidates affected choose to sue.
And
it's in court this morning.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And just so that the committee is aware, I think there is a potential of House bill, which would be a temporary.
I can't see in our process how anything is going to move through for what, next week or something, whatever.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yes, and in fact, the deadline for voters' pamphlet submissions was yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you very much, Senator Metzger. Was there anything additional?
No, that's it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you both very much, and we'll see you again in the near future. We're going to go on to SB 330, and SB 330 is posted for a work session. I will open the work session on SB 330. Colleagues, all we're going to be doing today on SB 330 is adopting the Dash 1 amendments. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I misspoke to the chair. We did receive a fiscal on the amendment, which actually guts the part of the bill that would have had much of a fiscal, and we did get a ruling from John Borden and Judy Hall that we can pass the measure, adopt the amendment and pass the measure without the fiscal on the original since it's been substantially changed. So if you would like to do both today, you may do that.
Why don't you explain what the amendment actually does and what it leaves from the original bill?
Senator Walker's original bill had two pieces. The first piece that the committee, I believe, intends to retain would require that the state voters pamphlet include a procedures for filing a complaint if you want to allege any violations of elections laws. The second piece would have required listing the 5 largest donors for and against a measure, and there were some testimony from the Secretary of State about administrative and costs and other issues with that. So the committee has proposed an amendment to take out the requirement to list the pro and con sources and simply include the notice for procedures to file complaints. And we do have a statement from fiscal that there is minimal fiscal impact on that amendment.
Okay. And yes.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the direction of the amendment. I will support it. But the I think an argument that may also have been intelligent, I don't know if it was ever made, but the filing deadlines and the printer deadlines and the mailing deadlines would have guaranteed virtually that the five greatest expenditures, pro and con, would be wrong by the time we got to the election.
I think that was the testimony that we had received, and I think that's why Senator Walker understood that the committee wouldn't proceed on those items. So, do I have a motion to adopt the dash one amendments?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Okay. There's been moved to adopt the dash one amendments. Is there any additional discussion? Any objection? Motion passes. Is there a motion to send SB 330 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 330 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing done, motion passes. I will ask Senator Walker if she will carry. If she will not carry, Senator Burdick, will you carry?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Committee members, I believe there is a potential that we may have a Tuesday meeting next week. We may not be able to do this for too long because a lot of people are requesting evening meetings. But since we only have Fridays to actually meet in terms of an open time, we may need to meet, we will be posting for Tuesday. Or we have, yes, today. So it'll be at 5. I'll try to do it in about an hour.
What day?
Tuesday.
The 31st.
The 31st.
Tuesday. Why does that evening sound already up?
Yeah. I think it'll be largely hearing day, if I might understand this correct. Yeah, well, actually, I can... Those are your bills, actually.
Yeah, cancel the hearing.
If there's a problem, we'll do something about the problem.
I'm just trying to think. I have to look at my calendar. Somehow Tuesday evening sounded like there was some other
thing. Yeah, and this would be at 5, actually, so...
Because we could put something else on. We have to post before 5.
I'm not sure. I just have to check. I don't know.
If you would check with Senator Metzger before we have to file.
Okay.
And with that, is there anything else for the good of the order? If not, enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you all next week.
I'll leave this with you.
Oh, I see.